Good morning. This is Carol Perhatch reading the first part of the Pantograph newspaper for Friday, August 11th, 2017. We'll begin on the front page, an article entitled Portillo's Ready for Opening. The hot dog eatery opens to the public Tuesday. Normal. Twin City residents craving a Portillo's hot dog near home need wait only 5 more days, a wait that apparently might have been a lot shorter. 16 or 18 years ago, it might have been, even longer than that, then Bloomington Mayor Judy Markowitz was a customer of ours and came up to the office and said, "You have to come down to our community and build a Portillo's there." Founder Dick Portillo said he came down here with some of his supervisors and we couldn't find a location at that particular time. "So it takes me a while, but here we are," he added with a laugh. The right location turned out to be 202 Landmark Drive in Normal, where the suburban chain will open its newest restaurant to the public on Tuesday. To prepare, staff is participating in several training meals, including one Thursday for local officials, media, and guests. That followed a training meal for invited guests on Wednesday, with others continuing into the weekend. Before the meal, Portillo spoke about the company's 1963 beginnings as a Villa Park hot dog stand called the Dog House and the values that made the restaurant special, which CEO Keith Kinsey said continue to this day. "It's not just the food, it's the quality, it's the service, it's the ambiance, it's absolutely the attitude of the people," Kinsey said. Mayor Chris Coos is looking forward to the business opening just in time for a new year at Illinois State University, whose suburban students will now have another piece of home cooking in Normal. "This is going to be a home run for our community," Coos said. The town of Normal has agreed to give a developer, Bloomington Landmark, $1.875 million in future sales tax receipts from the restaurant, which could total $2.5 million with interest to subsidize demolition and construction. Continuing the article on page A2. The restaurant will employ 200 when it opens and 150 over the long term. Many of the jobs will be part-time. Portillo's built the 9,000-square-foot building with a double drive-through lane, seating for 250, and a prohibition theme after Bloomington Landmark bought the land and demolished a Motel 6. Portillo's, based in suburban Oak Brook, announced in April 2016 it would open a Normal location. The company opened its first downstate eatery in May in Champaign. Returning to the front page, there's an article titled Glasses Open World of Color. Colfax. When he leads the Ridgeview High School marching band in song, Zach Craig used to only experience part of the performance. The vibrant color guard flags appear dull to the senior drum major. The bright blue sky looks washed out, nearly white. "I realized I was colorblind in third grade art class when we were studying the color wheel," said Craig. "I could just distinguish a few colors. I confused the reds and the greens." While on a recent family vacation to Colorado, Craig said he enjoyed the mountainous landscape, but couldn't make out the unique shades of green in the trees or the red in the rocks. "Color just wasn't a huge part of my life," he said. That has all changed. His best friend and fellow drum major, Justin Givens, has known about Craig's color vision deficiency since seventh grade. When Givens discovered enchroma glasses, he decided his friend needed a pair. Enchroma glasses, which run between $270 to $430, alleviate red-green color blindness and enhance other hues. "I wanted him to see the colors we all take for granted," said Givens, a senior at Ridgeview. Craig said he'd heard about the glasses but was skeptical, calling the color-fixing technology something out of sci-fi. Over the summer, Givens quietly collected $350 in donations from his bandmates with the help of band director Anthony Marchese. They surprised Craig with a pair of Enchroma glasses last Friday on the final day of band camp. In a video of the gifting, which has racked up nearly 90,000 views on Facebook, Givens passes the glasses to Craig while they stand on the top of the scaffolding overlooking the marching band. Craig pops on the glasses and is immediately speechless in the video, grabbing the railing of the scaffolding for support. He pulls off the glasses to wipe away tears and turns to hug Givens and Marchese. "For the first time in 17 years, I could see color. It was hard to speak. I was barely breathing," said Craig. To give Craig the full experience, each section in the 62-person marching band was wearing a different colored shirt that day. They stood on the field and cheered for Craig as he took it all in. "The brass section wore red, and I couldn't believe how it stood out against the green grass," he said. Later that day, Craig asked Givens to join him in a trip to the hardware store to peruse paint chips. He couldn't stop snapping pictures of bright flowers in the garden department. Craig wore the glasses while visiting Uptown Normal on Thursday, where he examined the colorful outdoor murals. He said he has plans to explore all the new colors at his fingertips. "This weekend I'm going camping," said Craig. "I just want to walk around in the woods and see different shades of green in the trees. And fire. Fire looks so cool now." Before the glasses, Craig admits his favorite color was black. Now it's orange. "It sounds cheesy, but my favorite part about this whole thing is the fact that all these people in the band wanted me to experience this," said Craig. "It's proof that we're really a family and we really care about each other." Marchese said that the family environment in the band is not forced or shaped by the director. "It just happens. My job is to create a safe environment for these students where they can relax and have fun. To see it grow to this level is awesome. When I saw how they all came together for Zach, I felt a million feet tall," said Marchese. Let's go back to the front page for one more article titled "Social Media Blocking Ignites Debate." An emerging debate about whether elected officials violate people's free speech rights by blocking them on social media is spreading across the U.S. as groups sue or warn politicians to stop the practice. The American Civil Liberties Union this week sued Maine Governor Paul LePage and sent warning letters to Utah's congressional delegation. It followed recent lawsuits against the governors of Maryland and Kentucky and President Donald Trump. Trump's frequent and often unorthodox use of Twitter and allegations he blocks people with dissenting views has raised questions about what elected officials can and cannot do on their official social media pages. Politicians at all levels increasingly embrace social media to discuss government business, sometimes at the expense of traditional town halls or in-person meetings. We'll move on to page 2 for the rest of the article. People turn to social media because they see their elected officials as being available there and they're hungry for opportunities to express their opinions and share feedback, said Anna Thomas, spokesman for the ACLU of Utah. That includes people who disagree with public officials. Most of the officials targeted so far, all Republicans, say they are not violating free speech, but policing social media pages to get rid of people who post hateful, violent, obscene, or abusive messages. A spokeswoman for Maryland Governor Larry Hogan called the August 1st lawsuit against him frivolous and said his office has a clear policy and will remove all hateful and violent content and coordinated spam attacks. The ACLU accused Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin of blocking more than 600 people on Facebook and Twitter. His office said he blocks people who post obscene and abusive language or images or repeated off-topic comments and spam. Spokesman for Utah Senator Orrin Hatch and Representative Mia Love, who were singled out by the ACLU, said people are rarely blocked and only after they have violated rules posted on their Facebook pages to prevent profanity, vulgarity, personal insults, or obscene comments. We are under no obligation to allow Senator Hatch's Facebook page to be used as a platform for offensive content or misinformation, spokesman Matt Whitlock said. Katie Fallow, senior staff attorney at Columbia University's Knight First Amendment Institute, which sued Trump last month, said there's no coordinated national effort to target Republicans. The goal is to establish that all elected officials, no matter the party, must stop blocking people on social media. If it's mainly used to speak to and hear from constituents, that's a public forum, and you can't pick and choose who you hear from, Fallow said. Rob Anderson, chairman of Utah's Republican Party, scoffed at the notion that politicians are violating free speech rights by weeding out people who post abusive content. You own your Facebook page, and if you want to block somebody or hide somebody, that's up to you, Anderson said. Why else is there a tab that says hide or block? Court decisions about how elected officials can and cannot use their accounts are still lacking in this new legal battleground. But rules for public forums side with free speech advocates, said Erwin Chemerinsky, dean of the University of California, Berkeley Law School. For instance, lower court rulings say the government cannot deny credentials to journalists because their reporting is critical. These are government officials communicating about government business. They can't pick or choose based on who they like or who likes them, Chemerinsky said. But public officials may be able to legally defend the way they police their social media pages if they prove their decisions are applied evenly. It's got to be content neutral, Chemerinsky said. Trump's use of social media and the Supreme Court's decision in June, striking down a North Carolina law that barred convicted sex offenders from social media, is driving the increased attention to the issue, said Amanda Shanor, a fellow at the Information Society Project at Yale Law School. More and more of our political discussion is happening online, Shanor said. It's more important that we know what these rules are. Continuing on page A2, the Daily Digest items. Talk on eclipse set Monday. In Tawanda, Lee Green of Twin City Amateur Astronomers will present a program on the eclipse at 5 p.m. Monday at Tawanda District Library. His talk will include a discussion of celestial alignments, including the solar eclipse that will be visible on August 21st in Illinois, and how to safely view it. Attendees will have the opportunity to safely view the sun using solar binoculars and eclipse glasses. And another digest item at Eureka. Survey set in Woodford County. Woodford County Health Department will conduct a survey Monday through September 15th to gather household data. Results will assist the Health Department and emergency response agencies to better prepare residents for potential disasters. Surveyors will wear identification badges. The survey will take 10 to 15 minutes to complete. Let's go to page A3 for some local articles. Normal. For Pastor Tim Farrell, Thursday was another disappointment in the search for a permanent home for his flock. It's always been our dream to have a permanent facility on the west side of Normal, and it's quite difficult to find, said Farrell, founder of the Tabernacle Church, a local ministry. We've looked at over 30 different properties. The search could continue after the church's top choice was reflected by the Normal Planning Commission. That recommendation goes to the Normal City Council for action 7 p.m. August 21st. Commissioners Bob Broad, Michael McFarland, Tracy Widner Green and A.J. Zimmerman voted against the site. Rick Bozer and Mike Matega voted yes. Town staff included planner Mercy Davidson recommended denying the request to rezone the site at 1845 West Hovey Avenue for use as a church, so it will still match the surrounding area, which is zoned for light manufacturing as a buffer between heavy manufacturing west and business offices to the east. When you start pulling out little pieces here and there and changing them, you're diluting the intent of the overall comprehensive plan and our zoning ideas, said Brian Day, the town's lead attorney. Commissioners questioned whether another light manufacturing user might buy the site, which has been vacant only a year. John Pratt, a Bloomington attorney representing the church, said the town's vision is already gone, however. He noted McLean County Unit 5 offices, a landscape warehouse, and a veterinary clinic are already in the area. It's admirable that the staff is hanging on to this idea of light industrial use, but along this part of Hovey Avenue, it's not reality, he said. Pratt said it's common for churches to be located in the middle of neighborhoods with different zoning. He also noted town staff said their report that putting a church there would not harm nearby properties. The church has not yet bought the site. Members currently meet at a hotel. The board voted unanimously against another zoning request from Glenn and Paul of Springfield, who owns North Fell Apartments at 701 North Fell Avenue. Because the student-occupied building is on a parcel zoned single-family residential, Paul can't improve it, including modernizing the current structure or putting another one on a large, empty field to its south. Town staff, however, agreed with residents of the neighborhood who said Cypress Street should be the end of multifamily apartments in the area, meaning families should live there, not Illinois State University students. While that may have been a natural boundary at one time, that has not stopped students from living there, said Jason Berkman, an attorney representing Paul. This is adjacent to campus. It's clearly attracting students, and he wants to do more. Continuing on page A3, an area man arrested in Casey's burglary. Normal. Police have arrested a normal man in connection with a Tuesday night burglary at the Casey's General Store at 1301 South Main Street in Normal. Normal Police Chief Rick Bleckner said the 21-year-old man was arrested Thursday on preliminary charges of burglary and theft with a prior conviction. He is expected to appear in court either Friday or Saturday. The Pantograph does not name suspects in such cases until they are formally charged. The incident occurred around 9:55 p.m. Tuesday when a clerk reported that a man came into the store, reached over the counter when the drawer opened and took an undisclosed amount of cash from the register. The suspect was seen fleeing from the business on foot. There was no weapon used and no injuries were reported, Bleckner said. On Thursday, NPD detectives obtained a search warrant for a residence in the 400 block of West Vernon Avenue in Normal and recovered evidence related to the burglary, said the department. The suspect is currently being held at the McLean County Jail awaiting court hearing. Meanwhile, Normal police are still investigating a March 30th armed robbery at University Liquors at 706 Beaufort Street near the Illinois State University campus. About 3:32 p.m. March 30th, a man wearing a mask entered the store demanding money while armed with a handgun, police said. He ran north from the business with an undisclosed amount of cash. No employees were injured. The suspect was described as a man of medium build, about 5 feet 4 inches to 5 feet 8 inches tall, wearing a dark hoodie, dark pants, white tennis-style shoes, and an orange mask. Anyone with information about this robbery is asked to contact Detective Brad Park at 309-454-9527 or McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. Continuing on page A3, solar panels to help YWCA save. From Bloomington, 383 opportunities to reduce fossil fuel energy consumption and save money are being placed on the roof of the YWCA McLean County. Installation of 383 solar photovoltaic panels began in July and will be complete next week, said Perry Mayer, Director of Building Operations at the YWCA, 1201 North Hershey Road. "We'll start receiving electricity through the panels immediately when the work is done," Mayer said. "Our minimum lifetime savings for the system is $75,000. Because YWCA's contract with Shine Development Partners, a renewable energy company, is 25 years, that means an annual savings of $3,000 a year. This is the right thing to do environmentally, and we can save money," said YWCA Vice President of Operations Liz German. "They're setting an example for our community," said Michael Brown, Executive Director of the Normal-based Ecology Action Center, a non-for-profit agency working to preserve a healthy environment. "It's impressive that a non-profit organization is taking the lead," Brown said. "This is a win-win situation. They are reducing their carbon footprint and saving money, and they have a sustainable energy source for years to come." During a brief rooftop tour Thursday, Mayer pointed out the panels cover two-thirds of the YWCA roof. Panels are not being placed on the remaining third because that part of the roof will need to be replaced within 25 years. Installation is being performed by Straight Up Solar, a solar energy contractor. Wilcox Electric, an electrical contractor, is making the connection from the Ameren power grid to the solar system components, Mayer said. Mayer had contacted solar energy companies and concluded that even with low-interest financing, the YWCA couldn't afford to purchase solar panels. Several months later, Straight Up Solar contacted Mayer and proposed a power purchase agreement in which that company would install the panels and Shine would buy the panels, pay for the labor, and sell the energy that the solar panels create to the YWCA at a reduced rate. The rate would be less than what the YWCA currently pays Ameren for electrical distribution and Constellation for energy. "If the sun is shining, the panels will produce electricity," Mayer said. "At night and during cloudy days, most of the Y's electricity will come from Ameren and Constellation." When the panels produce more electricity than the Y needs, the extra energy will flow into the energy grid, resulting in lower Ameren and Constellation bills. The solar panel project follows the Y switch earlier this summer from fluorescent to LED lights, resulting in a projected annual savings of $15,800. "We have to turn the lights on anyway," German said. "We may as well pay less for it so we can put that money into programs and staff." Moving to page A4, Peoria. A McLean man has been convicted of charges related to the robbery of a Normal credit union last summer. Scott Brooks, 34, was convicted Wednesday after about an hour of deliberation by a jury in U.S. District Court for the Central District of Illinois in Peoria. During the three-day trial, jurors heard evidence that Brooks entered the credit union on July 28, 2016, wearing a partial mask and gloves and wielding what appeared to be a firearm. A teller recognized Brooks as the person who had cashed bad checks at the credit union in the months preceding the robbery, said the prosecutors. Police located a gray Buick SUV matching the one driven by the suspect at Book's residence. Also located were gloves and shoes linked to the suspect. According to a statement from the U.S. Attorney's Office, follow-up investigation by the FBI and Normal Police Department revealed that Books had texted a friend the day of the robbery, "What bank should I rob today?" A sentencing date has not been set for Books, who faces up to 20 years in prison. He remains in the custody of the U.S. Marshals Service. Also on this page are some area calendar announcements. The Central Illinois Radio Society Open House will be Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the airfield 2 miles northwest of Funk's Grove on McLean County Route 36. Bloomington Normal Model Airplane Club and Celebration is there in celebration of National Model Aviation Day. Another one, Friends of Carlock Library Farmers Market will hold a meeting Saturday 9 to 11 at the Carlock Public Library. Garden produce and bake sale will be also held. Donations can be given at 309-376-5651. And another item from the area calendar is there will be a dinner to help buy school supplies for foster children, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, 17 Lafayette Court, No. 4, Bloomington. It will be a pork chop dinner with the sponsors of Goodfellas MC. It will benefit 110 foster children served by the Children's Home and Aid. The cost is $7 at the door. Now we'll go to page A5 and read a few editorial opinions. Cheers and a few reminders. Cheers to all the participants in the recent St. Jude Runs and Telethon, which raised more than $10 million for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Central Illinois is lucky to have a St. Jude affiliate hospital in Peoria and to be relatively close to the main St. Jude campus in Memphis, Tennessee. Every dollar you donate helps the family whose child is fighting cancers. Families are never charged for treatment at St. Jude's. And cheers to the Illinois State Police for switching to an electronic ticket writing system that will provide an 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper rather than a handwritten form. The e-citation program is now active in 40 of Illinois' 102 counties. The state says the process is faster and more accurate. Back to school means different things to different people, but it's a shot in the arm literally for students who are required to have a vaccine or booster shot before returning to class. Illinois law says all students entering K through 12 schools must be immunized against measles, mumps, rubella, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, polio, chickenpox, and hepatitis B. Vaccines and boosters are also required at the college level and for daycare centers. Those with religious or medical exemptions must provide signed documents from their doctor. And a reminder to check your batteries in your smoke alarms and carbon monoxide detectors every month, and change the batteries every 6 months. New alarms and detectors should be purchased every 10 years. Alarms and detectors should be in every home and apartment and checked regularly. Make sure your family has a planned escape route in case of fire, and practice your route once a month. And this has been Carol Perhatch reading the Pantograph for Friday, August 11th, 2017. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your listening, and we'll see you, hear you, next week.